অকুল গরল পাথারে, লক্ষ শূন্য লক্ষ বাসনা ছুটিছে গভীর আধারে। জানি না কখন ডুবে যাবে কোন অকুল গরল পাথারে। তুমি বিশ্বদীপদ হন্তা, এসে দাঁড়াও রধিয়া পন্থা, তবু শ্রীচরণ তলে নিয়ে সুমুর মত্ত বাসনা ঘুচায়ে। মলিন মর্ম মুছায়ে, আছো অনলয় আনিলে চিরনা ভনিলে, ভূধর সলিলে গগনে, আছো বিটপিলতায় জলদের গায়, শশীতার কায় তপনে, আছো অনলয় আনিলে চিরনা ভনিলে, ভূধর সলিলে গগনে, আছো বিটপিলতায় জলদের গায়, শশীতার কায় তপনে। আমি নয়নে বসন বাঁধিয়া, বসে আধারে মরিব কাঁদিয়া, আমি দেখি নাই কিছু বুঝি নাই কিছু, দাও হে দেখায় বুঝায়, মলিন মর্ম মুছায়। তুমি নির্মল কর মঙ্গল করে, মলিন মর্ম মুছায়।
So in continuation of the same topic, we will take up a few more verses in the same, from the same chapter. In the 60th verse, Lord Krishna says that there are many problems in this path of spiritual life. Yatato hyapi kaundeya purushasya vipaschitaha ഇന്ദ്രിയാണി പ്രമാധീനി ഹരന്തി പ്രസഭം മനഃ, താനി സർവാണി സംയമ്യ യുക്ത ആസീത മത്പരഃ, വശീഹി യസ്യേന്ദ്രിയാണി തസ്യ പ്രജ്ഞാ പ്രതിഷ്ഠിത. സോ സം ഓഫ് ദി ചാലഞ്ചസ് ആൻഡ് പ്രോബ്ലംസ് ദാറ്റ് വി മേ എൻകൗണ്ടർ ഇൻ അവർ സ്പിരിച്വൽ ലൈഫ് ആർ ഔട്ട്ലൈൻഡ് ഹിയർ. യതതഃ പ്രയത്നം കുർവതഃ അപി യസ്മാത് കൗന്തേയ പുരുഷസ്യ വിഭശ്ചിതഃ മേധാവിനഃ അപി ഇതി വ്യവഹിതേന സംബന്ധക. ഇന്ദ്രിയാണി പ്രമാധീനി പ്രമഥനശീലാനി വിഷയാഭിമുഖം കി പുരുഷം വിക്ഷോഭയന്തി ആകുലീകുർവന്തി ആകുലീകൃത്യ ച ഹരന്തി പ്രസഭം പ്രസഹ്യ പ്രകാശം ഏവ പശ്യതു വിവേകവിജ്ഞാനയുക്തം. നൗ വെൻ വി ട്രൈ ടു കൺട്രോൾ ദി സെൻസസ് ആൻഡ് ട്രൈ ടു ഗിവ് എ സ്പിരിച്വൽ ഓറിയൻറ്റേഷൻ ടു യുവർ മൈൻഡ്, sometimes even highly accomplished spiritual seekers do face problems. What are the problems? Because the indriyas, our senses of perception, senses of cognition, and also senses of action, by the very nature drag the mind towards external objects, which drag us away from our spiritual track. Now, the beginning of spiritual life is an attempt to give a spiritual orientation to these senses. We do not normally control the mind, or that's a term that we use normally. Mind is not an entity that we can control any more than the senses of perception. If we take a strong decision, as I said earlier, yesterday, if we take a strong decision that I am not going to see that object, or I am not to hear that word. I am not going to smell that object. I am not going to taste it, and so on, mind you. Whenever we take a decision, whenever we try to forcibly restrain the senses of perception, we may succeed in physically or externally restricting their movements, their actions. But internally, we won't be able to do that. As I said earlier, if we take a strong decision not to see an object, because that object may bring an unhealthy imagery, visual object into our mind, and keep our eyes closed, then mentally we will be seeing that object. So if we take a decision not to hear something, mentally we will be hearing, you know. Actually, mental hearing, mental seeing, mental smelling, mental tasting, all these are in fact much more destructive than physical seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and so on. Because they create these subtle activities. Subtle means where the indriyas, senses of perception or action, are not directly involved. Mind alone is involved. What happens? They leave a strong mark in the mind. As I said earlier, our whole empirical experiences can be divided into three categories. One, Jagrat, Swapna, and Sushupti. Avasthatraya it is called. It is called Mandukya Upanishad, Mandukya Karya. You come across this description. In waking state, we experience different things. When mind and the senses of perception are involved, we see an object. When mind and eyes come together, we come to know of an object from hearing the noise, when the ears, sense of hearing and mind come together. So taste, mind and sense of taste come together. Sense of touch and sense of smell, like that. In dream state, we relive, re-experience the same things, but at the mental level, without the participation of the senses. When you are sleep, when you are deep asleep, or rather when you are dreaming, your eyes are closed, it's pitch dark, it's a small room, but you can see yourself traveling on an elephant, walking under the burning sun. You will see that, but eyes are closed. It's dark everywhere, but you see. So you hear. You learn a song this morning, you try to remember, you practice again tomorrow, or maybe after 10 years, because when we do that, we hear the same sound, not at a physical level, but a mental level. It's called the sukshma level, the subtle level. Subtle experiences color the mind, influence the mind much more profoundly than gross experiences in waking state. In deep sleep, of course, there is no experience at all. Mind gets immersed in Moola Vidya, which is a technical subject in Vedanta. Now, the point is this: we cannot forcibly control the mind or the senses of perception. But then there is a way of controlling them, that is, to give a promotion to them, to give a spiritual orientation, to sublimate their functions, their movements. Instead of seeing millions and millions of YouTube programs which may bring poison to your mind, you see good things. Instead of hearing very, very undesirable things, you hear good things. So also, the five senses of perception can be given a spiritual orientation. Then they bring good food to the mind, and mind slowly gets a spiritual orientation. And then you find mind naturally, instinctively move or go to spiritual ideas. This is technically what is called controlling the mind. So, in this verse, in the 60th verse, Lord Krishna says, even advanced spiritual seekers, medhavinaka, Shankaracharya says, intelligent people, even they are sometimes victims of temptations and conflicts and problems. A spiritual seeker should control them and should remain calm and quiet. Now, the question arises sometimes, and this question is being discussed in the Gita in a very, very graphic style. In the 6th chapter, Arjuna raises a very serious question to Krishna, which is perhaps a question that all spiritual seekers frequently ask themselves or ask others. What happens to those who make some effort in spiritual life? Meditate or pray or read scriptures, do japa, attend aratriga, and so on. But then they do not have much consistency in their practices. They somehow have a deviation or a fall. They themselves feel they do not succeed. They have a fall, or maybe they may die before they reach their goal. What happens to them? We have meditated for a long time. We tried to practice. When visiting Vedanta societies or temples or churches, depending upon the context, reading scriptures. But then suddenly there is a darkness, it is a dark night of the soul, it's called in mystical tradition. Suddenly you feel you are up against a dead wall, skepticism, doubts. What happens? Sometimes and then, perhaps some unfortunate people stop their efforts at that stage. Does it mean that they completely lose out? All their efforts go in vain. They have tried for years, everything practically goes in vain. Arjuna asked this question. Ayadi Sadhyo Pedu Yoga Chalida Manasaha Aprapti Yoga Samsiddhim Kam Gadim Krishna Gachati Kachinu Bhavi Brashtaka Chinna Bhavanasyadi Apradishto Mahabahu Vimudu Brahmanapadi. Lord Krishna asked this question. 60, in the 6th chapter, Ayadi Sadhyo Pedu, etc. 37th verse. What happens to those who make some effort, do sincerely practice, but not sincere enough to have consistency in their spiritual life? Do they lose everything? In answer to this, Lord Krishna gives a very interesting response. In the 60th verse, Lord Krishna says, in the sixth chapter, yeah, 40th verse. Of course, it is not continuing. I am not following one verse after another. Lord Krishna gives an interesting answer. Nahi kalyana krut kaschid durgadim tadagacchadi parthana iveka namutra vinasastasya vidyade nahi kalyana krut kaschid durgadim tadagacchadi. This is the answer, but this is not what I am focusing on. I am going to some other verse. He says, anybody who does a little spiritual practice, meditating half an hour, listening to a great spiritual talk or ideas or prayer once or twice in their life, sincerely, he is a kalyanakrit kaschidi, he never perishes. That's not the point. The point is, we don't lose anything. Why we don't lose anything? That's the point. The real cause is, life is not one. Life is not just one journey that begins with the cradle, that ends with the grave. When the dead body is pushed through that tube, doesn't enter. Otherwise, it is terrible. Actually, if your life begins with the cradle and it ends with a piece of stone in the cemetery with a few flowers, is that life? In that case, human life is not any better than the life of a tree which may live for several centuries. Man may live for maybe 100 years at the most. That is not human life according to Vedanta and Yoga. Life continues. So if you do little spiritual practice now and then for some reason or other, you are not able to continue. Then what happens? This will create a spiritual capital, a deposit. And when you are reborn again, with this you can start your journey again. Which means, whatever little you do is not lost. It continues, it remains there. And then what happens? In the 43rd verse, Lord Krishna says, Tatratam buddhisam yogam labhade paurodekhigam yatatecha tado bhuyasam siddhu kurinantana. When you are reborn again, you don't get this body because it is burnt to ashes. But what you have done with this body remains intact. It is spiritual capital. You have made a small donation to a noble endeavor. You have prayed once or twice a day, maybe for a short time, maybe once in your whole lifetime, but sincerely. You have helped a blind man to cross the street without any selfish motive. You have thought a noble thought in your mind, spoken a few noble words to some distressed person by consoling him. All these create a spiritual capital. This capital is there. So when you are born again, what happens? That's what Lord Krishna says in the 43rd verse. Tatratam buddhisam yogam labhade. Buddhisam yoga means what? Your mind, your buddhi, which is a repository of all the spiritual impressions, the wealth, the spiritual capital that you have accumulated in this life. May not be much, but still substantial. When you are born again, with that capital, you continue your spiritual journey. That's why when you pass the street, there are many things on both sides of the street. There is a nightclub, there are movie theaters, there are Vedanta societies, there are maybe churches, places of worship, meditation centers. Option is yours to decide. In what direction our mind moves? There are many options. Depending upon the spiritual capital you have made in the previous life, your mind takes you towards the meditation center. But let me try to meditate a little. Why? Where does the impression come from? As I said, sometimes in one family, five children, identical parentage, identical education, identical domestic conditions, but totally different from one from the other. How do you explain this diversity? It's not like human beings are not like matchsticks in a box, which are identical in everything. The size, the amount of powder, the amount, this length, the weight, everything. But human beings are totally different. Physically may be identical. But the way mind reacts, responds to different stimuli from external circumstances is different. So if your mind has got the spiritual capital, then what happens? You look at the billboard in the both sides of the street, you find suddenly there's a place where people meditate, you move in that direction. Why? You have meditated some time in the past, maybe not in the previous life, maybe it's a millennium ago, several 10, 20 lives before you have meditated. you see suddenly a place. When you see the object, the billboard, meditation center, you move in that direction. It could happen the other way also. There are undesirable billboards that also can prompt you. Tatra yoginam kule tam buddhi samyogam buddhya samyogam buddhi samyogam labhate paurodekhikam purvasmin dehe bhavam paurodekhikam. What is the culture? How does the culture come from? You have with an earlier body, in an earlier life, maybe hundreds of years back, you have meditated. That spiritual capital pushes you forward in spiritual life. It becomes a spiritual capital. You can draw your check on the strength of that wealth you have accumulated. Chetadeja prayatnam karoti tadaha tasmat purvakrita samskaran bhuyo bhukutaram samsiddhu samsiddhi nimittam hi kurunantana. So what happens on the strength of samskaras that you accumulated in previous life, you continue your spiritual journey. That is one unique aspect of Vedanta and Yoga and also Buddhist tradition. The doctrine of law of karma and the doctrine of rebirth. Sometimes I made the statement earlier, you know, many of the problems of multiple personalities, schizophrenia, phobia, conflicts are all sometimes analyzed by mainstream psychiatrists in the light of law of karma and rebirth. So the point is, you may try yatato hebi kaundeya purushasya vibaschidaha indriyani pramadhini haranti prasabham manaha. Though there could be temptations even for intelligent people, still you don't have to despair, because there is a possibility that at one stage you may succeed in spiritual life. That is one unique aspect of Gita. So then again, the text continues. How does a spiritual seeker get lost? How does he lose his track? That's been explained in the 42nd verse and 43rd verse of the second chapter. Dhyayato visayan pumsaha sangasteshu bhajayade sangar samjayade kamaha kama krodho bhijayade krodhad bhavadi sammoha sammoha smriti vibhrama smriti bhramsha buddhinasho buddhinasha pranashyati. It is a very graphic description of how spiritual seekers lose their way. When we meditate, when we think, when we ponder over some sense objects, slowly, gradually we develop a desire to have them, to enjoy them. It is explained both ways in the scriptures. Based on your previous karma, samskaras and vrittis and vasanas, strong aptitudes that you have accumulated in previous life, you go in search of different sense objects, depending upon what you are looking for. That's one approach, that is true. The other approach is, you naturally, instinctively get focused, attached to what is available around you. And then you develop a strong desire to get them, to enjoy them. Both are equally true. A really enlightened person can remain surrounded by things that may normally take a beginner out of his track. In fact, that is a test of a spiritual seeker. It is possible for one to remain, even in the midst of temptation, still remain unattached, unaffected. But that's only for an advanced spiritual seeker. A spiritually enlightened person can stay in a marketplace, in the middle of a street, and think of God. It is also true that a person who is not ready will not be able to think of anything higher, even in a forest hermitage, in a temple. Even in a temple or a church, our mind may waver, wander about, in the forest of sense objects. That's for the beginner. Therefore, both are correct. So for a beginner, a proper atmosphere and environment is a great help. And therefore, he should try to give a spiritual orientation to his mind and also to his senses by letting his senses move around spiritually helpful ideas and thought currents. Otherwise, these senses may bring poison to the mind, and mind get poisoned, and mind may lose its track. There's an interesting verse in the famous Prakarana Grantha, Vivekachudamani of Shankaracharya. Shabdadivi panjabireva panja panjatma pusagunena buddhaha kuranga madanga padanga meenaha brunka nara panjabiranchitakki. It's an interesting verse. The Shankaracharya asks question, what's a helpless condition of a human being? So he gives some examples. In ancient times, hunters used to play on some musical instrument to get deers out of their bushes where they'll be hiding. When they play the musical instruments, deers will come out of the maybe bushes or caves, and at the time they'll be shot by arrows by the hunters. And elephants, they'll be moving in herds, touching each other, and they will fall in a pit and they will lose their freedom. They'll be killed sometimes. So the deer are caught by the temptation of the sense of sight. Sense of hearing. When they listen to the music, they come out of their bushes or have maybe caves, and they are shot by the arrows and they are killed. And elephants' sense of touch, they will be touching each other, the baby elephants will be protected by the bigger ones, and as they move, they fall in a pit and they are caught, they are trapped. So they lose their freedom, they get killed because of their attraction to the sense of touch. And then there is a moth, small tiny insects that may emerge in large numbers during rainy season, thousands of them. Seeing an object at a distance, maybe fire, blazing fire, they imagine that there is something very wonderful, and they fly in that direction and they are burned to ashes. So they are caught by the sense of sight. Kuranga, madanga, padanga, meena and fish, they are drawn, they are attracted by the bait and they are caught and they lose their freedom, they are killed. Sense of taste. And then there are some smaller creatures that move about, attracted by the smell of flowers. And as they move from flower to flower, zipping the honey, they are caught by some other insects and they are killed. Sense of smell. So in the examples of all these five creatures, they are caught, they lose their freedom, they are killed because they are trapped by one sense of cognition, perception. But in the case of human beings, simultaneously, every moment, our mind is being dragged towards different external objects. All the five senses are dragging the mind towards external objects. Even when you are sitting quiet somewhere, mentally you are hearing, mentally you are seeing, mentally you are touching, smelling, tasting, and so on. It's going on every minute, every second. So, what is the plight, what is the the sorry condition of human being, Shankaracharya asked this question. Nara panjabhiranchita kim, because they are simultaneously being tempted by the five senses of perception. So, in this context, what happens? We get focused, we get attracted to a certain things. Then we have a strong desire to have them. So, sangasteshu bhajayade sangha sanjayade kamaha kama krodho bhijayade. So, first attachment, then desire, then if we are not able to acquire them, we become angry towards obstacles that create problems in our enjoyment. And then krodha bhavati sammoha, when we become angry, we lose our control, self-control, and gradually we lose our balance. So, this is a graphic description of the psychological degradation of the human mind, which only emphasizes the need to mentally bring to our mind images which are helpful in spiritual life. And maybe that's much more true in our times. You may sit in your room, you have a computer, if you have Google or YouTube, whatever it is, you are the worst friends around with you and you are the worst enemies with you. It's a mighty weapon that can help you in spiritual life and that can degrade you in your life. You don't have to make much effort. You don't have to walk. You are just sitting in your own comfortable room and a computer that's enough, a TV that's enough for you. Either to become a saint or to become a, it's opposite. I don't use the word sinner, it's not acceptable. The opposite of it. So, the point is, this happens at all times the human life. Now you can see this gradual evolution of the human mind in the Upanishad literature also. Because we are surrounded by different things and we go after what we are fit for. The three boons in the Kathopanishad, you can see three levels of human aspiration, human desire, human efforts and endeavor. It's a simple story, but I have to, it's a very interesting one. It gives a very graphic description of the evolution of human desire, human aspirations. In a way, it also describes three levels of the evolution of human civilization. The story of a small boy, his name is Nachiketa. His father was reputed to be a great philanthropist, a Vedic ritualist. So one day he was performing some elaborate Vedic rituals which involved giving away all his possessions. So the little boy found that his father, instead of making a gift of good horses, were trying to, good horses, cows and elephants. These were three types of gifts that, and gold of course. But mostly these three items, horses, elephants and cows, were the gifts commonly distributed during the early Vedic period. So one day the little boy found that his father was giving away cows which would give milk, old battered cows. I mean, the Upanishad describes the type of cows his father was distributing, making a pretension of philanthropy without really losing anything for himself, because he wanted to be known as a great philanthropist. So he was giving away all old useless cows that won't give any milk. So the little boy wanted to bring his father to a sense of propriety and went and asked him, to whom are you going to give me? Because a son, an obedient son, is an important wealth for any father. Tasmai mam dasi siti, he asked three times, didiyam tridiyam sahovaja, and his father said, murtive tuam didamidi, I am going to give a gift of you to the lord of death. poetic way of saying get lost or something like that. I'm going to give you a way to the Lord of death. The father was completely annoyed, lost his balance, became angry and shouted at the little boy, I'm going to send you to the Lord of death. Now the little boy wanted to teach his father a good lesson in spiritual life. So he started his journey to the Lord of death. That's how the mythological story. There's a big, great spiritual message behind the story. The story by itself is a bit crude, but there's a great spiritual, philosophical message behind. So he reached the Lord of death, the palace of the Lord of death. There he found Yama, that's the name. He was away. He had gone on some errands and he returned only on the third day. And he found a small little boy waiting for him for 3 days. He was very much perturbed. This little boy was waiting in my home for 3 days and without food. Anasnan, without eating any food. Tisrovasi, Adavasi, Grihe. Anasnan Brahman Adhir Namasya. Oh little boy, you waited in my home without food, drinking water or eating food for 3 days fasting. In compensation, I'm very sorry about this, I shall give you 3 boons. You can ask 3 boons in compensation for the great austerity you practice in my home, waiting for 3 days without eating or drinking. Nachiketa, the little boy, asked 3 boons. These 3 boons represent 3 levels in the evolution of human aspiration. 3 levels in the evolution of human civilization. The first boon that little boy asked is this. When I go back to my home, my father should not be angry with me. This is not very different when we ask God to give a good job, give plenty of money, increment, promotion, and so on. Nothing wrong in it, but that's only beginning of spiritual life. Nothing wrong in it. Because the little boy, he wanted a solution to his immediate problem because he has left his home without his father's permission. So he was afraid that his father will scold him when he get back to his home. So my shanda sangalpa sumana yadhasya vidamanyam dugutamo ma abhimurtyu tuk prasishtam ma abhivade prasida edat trayanam prathamam varam prane. My first boon that I am asking you is this. When I get back to my home, my father should be pleasant. He should speak to me pleasantly. He should not get angry with me. He should not scold me. Like a child asking for chocolates. So also the beginning of spiritual life, we all ask for a solution to our immediate everyday problems. That is all right, nothing wrong, but we should not stop there. That's the message of this Upanishad. Then Nachiketa thought for some time, what about the second boon? He knew that his Lord of death will solve his immediate problem. When he gets back to his home, his father won't be angry with me, would not beat me or scold him. Little boy of 5 years, natural fear. Then he thought, but then what about my fate after death? After death, I won't be able to enjoy the comforts of my home. So I should be able to go to heaven. Now Vedantic heaven, in the concept of heaven in Hindu Vedantic tradition is slightly different from the concept of heaven in Christian religion. In Christian religion, heaven is not just a place where you enjoy everything. It is also a kind of spiritual experience. It is more like the Sayujya concept of Ramanuja system, Visishtadvaita. But so Nachiketa asked for the second boon. I should be able to go to heaven because there you can live for a long time, much longer than life on this earth. సత్వమ స్వర్గమ దేశ మృత్యు ప్రబ్రోహితం శ్రద్ధదానాయ మహ్యం స్వర్గలోక అమృతత్వం భజంతి ఏదత్రయాణం ద్వితీయం వరం ఋణి. సెకండ్ బోన్ ఐఎమ్ ఆస్కింగ్ ఇస్ దిస్, ఐ షుడ్ బి ఏబుల్ టు గో టు హెవెన్ ఆఫ్టర్ డెత్. సో హెవెన్ ఈజ్ నథింగ్ బట్ an extension of comforts and enjoyments that are available in this world, maybe in a 5-star hotel, nothing more than that. That is heaven. It's not an eternal spiritual achievement or experience. It is something limited. After that, Nachiketas asked the third boon. There he asked for an answer to some of the fundamental, vital, philosophical and spiritual questions of human existence. What's the nature of God? Where do we come from? What's the mystery of human life? What is the mystery of life? What he is asking is not an answer to the mystery of life, but the mystery of death. In fact, if you get an answer to the mystery of death, you will get the correct answer, the mystery of life. Because death is nothing but disappearance of this physical body, which is what we call life in the ordinary empirical sense. So Nachiketa asked for the third boon. Eyam pretiye vichikitsa manushi astityege nayamasti idi jayike edad vidya manushishtastvayaham varanam eshavarastritiyaka. So he says, well, some people say that after death, nothing remains, everything is lost. We are nothing more than the physical body. That's the view of some people, one school of thought. According to another school of thought, it's not like that. After death, something remains intact. In fact, it is this inquiry into the mystery of life and death that's the beginning of all serious metaphysics and spirituality. Because if you just pray to God to go to heaven, then you don't ask for a higher boon of living in this world as a spiritual person. After death, you have a wonderful time. What about life in this world? When we live in this world, when we breathe, when we work with the 5 senses of action and 5 senses of perception, when we think, we should do all this in a spiritual way. We should be able to look upon the whole humanity as one spiritual family. We should be able to enjoy peace within and also have peace and harmony in our interaction with the rest of the creation, not only human beings, the whole creation. So that higher wisdom comes only when you unravel the mystery of death. And real life is nothing but an intelligent way to face death with a smile on your face, with a smile and peaceful, happy thought in your mind. That's a real sign of intelligent life. So, in answer to this, the teacher, Yama, tests whether this boy is actually fit for this or not. Whether he's really fit for the higher wisdom. You know, if you teach a person the highest metaphysics, and if that person is not ready, in the sense his mind is not prepared for it, then it won't bear fruit, and again it will be misunderstood, misconstrued often. So you should make sure that the student is ready for the highest wisdom, for the highest instruction. So Yama, the teacher, tries to test the boy. I shall make you the emperor of the world, I shall give you all wealth and comforts, enjoyments, if you don't insist on this particular third boon. Please withdraw that request and I shall give you many things as option. Panchiketa sticks to his goal and he insists, and finally Yama answers and he teaches him the highest spiritual wisdom. He says, this whole life is a journey and a chariot. Our intellect is the rider, the driver of the chariot. Mind is the reins with which you control the horses, and our senses of perception and senses of action are the horses. The body is the chariot. So this is the imagery. Atmanam vidhinam vidhi, sariram rithamevacha, buddhim tu saradham vidhi, mana pragrahamevacha. Indriyani paranyahu vishyan steshu gocharan, atmendriya mano yuktam, bhoktityahur manishinaha. These are two verses in the Kathopanishad. So this body is a chariot. This life itself is a journey in the chariot. Our intellect, buddhi, is the rider, the driver who drives the chariot. You need a reins to control the horses. Mind is the reins, and our senses of perception, senses of action, our sense of touch, sense of sight, sense of sound, sense of taste, sense of hearing, then all these other five senses of perception and action constitute horses. And the world of external senses constitute the path, the road by which you have to take the journey. Now suppose your horses are not perfectly under your control and the rider is fully drunk, the driver, reins broken, the horses unruly, untrained, untamed horses, and the road is full of potholes. You can imagine the type of journey. Instead of reaching your destination, you may end up in the ICU of the Kaiser Permanente perhaps, or any major hospital. On the other hand, if the driver, the rider, is an intelligent person, trained expert in riding the chariot, the horses are well trained, the reins solid, reliable, and the road well paved, then you can reach your goal. Similarly, in our life also, first of all, we must refine, train your intellect with good ideas, good perspectives, good attitudes, and mind should be steady. If mind is steady, then the senses will also be steady, because if reins well handled, properly handled by the driver, then horses also will be controlled properly by the charioteer. Then even if there are potholes, perhaps an expert driver can take you to your destination. Otherwise not. So in our life journey, what we need is this intelligence. Even while living in this world, in the midst of everyday duties and responsibilities, we must have this wisdom. We have our intellect, we should be endowed with wisdom. Vijnana saradiryastu means the driver of the charioteer, the chariot, the rider, the one who drives the controls the horses, should have wisdom. This wisdom comes by linking ourselves to a higher spiritual ideal. I mentioned this in this idea in the morning. When we look at the relative empirical changing realities, rather the changeable things of this world, and when we look upon them as permanent, then what happens? The smallest, the minutest problem can appear to be a big crisis, because we delude ourselves into thinking that this unpleasant incident, which is now disturbing you, is going to stay forever. And that misunderstanding causes you to lose your sleep, become anxious, become worried. And again, and the smallest enjoyable, happy experience also is interpreted to be an eternal experience, wrongly. So what is needed is, even while living in this world, in the midst of everyday duties and responsibilities, we must keep ourselves linked to a higher spiritual reality, higher goal. And that is God. Sri Ramakrishna puts it in a very, very simple language in the gospel. Put wisdom, of course, you may put it in a pocket perhaps. You may not be able to display in your hands. When there is a problem, when there is a crisis, then we must be able to remember. All these things are peripheral, transitory, non-eternal, perishable things, momentary. We forget the momentariness of these non-eternal experiences. And then we interpret them to be eternal. And that creates all the problems. Once we link ourselves to the higher spiritual reality, which is going to remain once for all, then we will be able to look upon the relative things as relative things. We won't interpret them as eternal things. That's one view that is explained here. Now, what happens when we are able to do that? Then Lord Krishna gives an interesting description here. So he says, when we do that, Ragad Dvesha Vyuktaistu Vishayan Indriyesharan Atma Vasya Vidheyatma Prasadam Athigachati. Before that, Sarvanarthasya Moolam Uktam Vishayabhidhyanam Atha Idanim Mokshakaranam Idamuchyate. So after giving a long description, a graphic description of how we lose track in spiritual life, as I said earlier, we meditate, we ponder over, we contemplate on the sense objects, we get drawn towards them, we get attracted towards them, then we want to enjoy them, then we try to acquire them, we are not always able to acquire them, then when there is a disappointment, we become angry, when we become angry, we lose our balance, and then finally, we mentally lose our track. That is the how human mind falls step by step through this trap of attraction, attachment to a sense objects. Dhyayato vishayan uktah sangaste shubha jayate. Sangasam jayade kamaha, kama krodho bhijayade, krodhar bhavadi sammoha, sammoha smriti vibhramaha, smriti bhramsha buddhinasu, buddhinasya pranasyati. This happens. So, we reach the lowest bottom level. Now, how to get out of this? So, vishayabhidhyanam, that's the sarva anarthasya moolam, vishayabhidhyanam, means pursuit of the sense pleasures. Pondering over sense pleasures is the fundamental root cause of all problems. Now here we have to, somebody may ask this question. We are surrounded by so many things. When we go to markets, when we walk in the street, when you drive alone, we are seeing in front of us all these things, which is called sarvanarthasya moolam. So how to get that? We cannot close our eyes. Of course, it's no use. So here, we can use one particular spiritual technique that is prescribed by Swami Yatishwaranandaji. If you read Meditation and Spiritual Practice, a great spiritual classic in English language, you'll understand. Swami Adishwaranandaji says, I mentioned this yesterday, we have to evolve a kind of spiritual filtering mechanism within our mind. Which means we may be in the midst of so many temptations, so many sense objects, which normally take us away from our spiritual track. But even in the midst of them all, our mind naturally withdraws from these objects. If you have a spiritual filtering mechanism, a natural sense of discerning mind, if you can develop, then what happens? Jagadvesha Vittayastu Vishayan Indriyasharin Atmavasya Vidheyarma Prasadam Adhigachati. So, if we can achieve this, can bring this spiritual mechanism into play, then our mind will be under our control, and then our senses also will be perfectly under our control, and then we will get this prasada. Prasada is very difficult to explain, but it's intensely felt. Whenever we do a little spiritual practice and we get a kind of peaceful, soothing effect in our mind, kind of inner divine contentment, that is prasada. A fraction of this prasada you find even among people who do even philanthropical activities, when they pay huge donation to some philanthropical pursuits, fighting AIDS or Ebola, you find they do all this because they want a peace of mind that comes when they do some noble deed, which brings with it a kind of mental inner feeling of fulfillment, a relaxing effect. But the prasada in the highest sense comes when we are able to bring our senses and mind naturally under our control. In the sense, when they naturally function in a spiritually conducive manner. For such a person, even in the midst of temptations, he can remain in a state of tranquility and peace. A classic example you find in the Mahabharata Vyadha Gita is a very interesting story, which is a great lesson for modern times. The teacher of this particular episode in the Mahabharata is a butcher by profession. The story is like this. A spiritual person, a spiritual seeker, left his home, left everything behind, went to a forest, sat under a tree and meditated and did spiritual practices for a long time, many years. And finally, he felt he had acquired a lot of mystic powers. And one day, he found some birds were fighting, sitting on the branches, top branch of the tree under which he was sitting, and they made a lot of noise. He felt so disturbed. He looked at them, and they burned to ashes. And he congratulated himself, "Oh, now I have acquired some mystical powers." That's how he felt. Which means he had not brought his mind or senses under control. He had just practiced some little asceticism. Now that's only the beginning of the story, not the end. So this man got up from where he was sitting. He went about begging food as a mendicant we used to do in those times. Just like Franciscans, you know, alms for St. Francis in medieval times. They used to shout and people used to give them alms. So also in ancient India, Bhavadi Bhiksham Dehi, these mendicants used to approach homes, different homes, and shout. They used to say, "Please give us alms." Some of the mendicants were emperors and princes. They did that. In fact, Vardhamana Mahavira was a great king, king of Vaishali. He did that. That's how he became so great. Buddha did that. Like that, these are old ancient tradition in India. So this man went to a home and he said, "Please give me alms." And immediately a voice from inside the home told him, please wait for some time. And this man got angry because he felt he was a great ascetic. So who is this woman, a female voice, who told him to wait? He couldn't bear it. In fact, instead of becoming humble, he had become arrogant because he had tried to practice some meditation without properly training, controlling his mind and senses. So he became so arrogant, so proud. Spiritual pride is much more terrible to restrain than anything else, you know. The moment this thought flashed in his mind, this lady, how dare she, how could she shout, tell me to wait when I ask for alms? The moment this thought flashed in his mind, the lady continued her conversation, said, look, don't get angry, I am not a, there are no birds here for you to turn to ashes, you know. Because the lady understood that this man, maybe some days back, while sitting under a tree, had turned two birds into ashes, burnt them. So the lady could understand this. There was no communication in those days, but because of her spiritual austerity, she had the spiritual insight to know that this man had done this, and out of a sense of arrogance, he is getting angry. But this man, this mendicant, was a seeker. Now, what's the difference between a spiritual seeker and a person who is not interested in any spiritual effort? A spiritual seeker will be able to turn his mind towards himself, not otherwise. If you do some spiritual practice, you will be willing to correct yourself. You will be able to turn the torch, the flashlight, into the interior of your own mind and correct yourself. The moment the lady told him that there are no birds here for you to burn, immediately this ascetic understood, I made a mistake. So he approached her. Please excuse me for getting angry. Please tell me, who is your teacher, your spiritual preceptor? So the lady told him, look here, you have to travel for some distance from here. There's a market, and there in a particular place you find a shop. His name is Vyatha. You go and approach him, and he will teach you the highest spiritual wisdom. So this man, this mendicant, continued his journey, reached the marketplace, found out the shop, where he found a man was sitting cutting meat. He was a butcher by profession, and he was distributing meat to his customers. So when he reached there, his name was Vyatha. When this mendicant reached there, Vyatha told him, please sit down for some time, I am right now busy. After I have send away all the customers, I shall talk to you. You were sent by the lady, by the way, you were sent by the lady, aren't you? Immediately he understood he was a real teacher, where he could understand who had sent him. And there is a dialogue between this Vyatha and this mendicant. It's called Vyatha Gita. You know, in the Mahabharata, there are innumerable Gitas. Gita means a song, poetical, classical poetry. Bhagavad Gita is only the most famous of them, not the only one. And this Vyatha Gita is metaphysically and spiritually as grand as Bhagavad Gita itself. So the highest spiritual wisdom is taught to a mendicant by a butcher who is busy every day in his everyday life. And he was engage in a profession which you won't like to engage yourself if you are a spiritual seeker. But in the midst of all these activities, he had acquired this spiritual wisdom because he looked upon his job as his way of worshipping the divine present everywhere. So every job, every work can become a tool, an instrument, can become a flower that we place at the feet of the Lord. Every act becomes an act of worship at that stage. Every thought becomes a meditation. Every movement becomes, according to Shankaracharya, like going around a sacred image, the temple or a church. And every thought becomes a spiritual contemplation. The whole world becomes temple. So you need, spirituality is not to be confined to 2 hours in the morning and 1 hour in the evening. If we put the secular activities in one compartment and spiritual activities in another compartment, each separate from the other, we will never be able to spiritualize our life. Then spirituality will never come, it will be only religion. Spirituality becomes spirituality when it goes beyond the earlier phases of its evolution, like rituals, mythology, philosophy. When it becomes experience means seeing the presence of the divine, experiencing the presence of the divine in the whole creation, both immanence and omnipresence of the Lord, which enables us to merge the secular with the spiritual, so that both become one. The secular gets merged in the spiritual. Whole life gets a spiritual orientation. It is the only way to practice spirituality. And this is possible in modern times also. We may be in the midst of activities which may apparently oppose to spirituality. Apparently, as I said, you know, Vyadha's profession was certainly far different from the profession of a priest in a temple or a church. Not a very helpful profession, apparently. But for a genuine spiritual seeker, this difference doesn't matter at all. For him, every act becomes an act of worship, and every thought becomes meditation. Whole life becomes an opportunity for practicing spirituality. So this is the essence of it. If you have time, we will have interaction. If there is no time, we'll conclude. Interaction. Time is there. Then you can, if there are questions that you would like to ask, you're most welcome.